Ready.
18th meeting of the Portland City Council. I want to have a few rules of the chamber iterated so everyone understands how we operate here. First, if you come up to speak, you only need to state your name. You don't need to provide your address or your phone number. If you're a lobbyist and you're registered as such, you need to declare that and tell us who you represent. Everyone gets 3 minutes to speak unless stated otherwise. You can testify only to the matter at hand, so we take up items one at a time, and of course, you need to testify on the item that's before the council at that moment. So that everybody feels welcome, speakers and members of the audience need to be courteous and respectful. Council will not allow interruptions while someone is speaking. That includes clapping or booing or personal attacks of any kind. You can certainly raise your hands if you support a speaker. Disruptive behavior in the chamber simply won't be tolerated, and you'll be warned and asked to leave if you are disruptive. If you have any handouts, please give them to the council clerk, and she'll provide them to the council. So thank you all for joining us here today, and could you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Okay, let's take up communications items. Oh, sorry, we have a proclamation, which we managed to forget twice in a row, and we won't forget again. Commissioner Fritz is going to read a proclamation this morning.
Thank you, Mayor Hales. I'd like to invite Carol Studeman, the member of the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission, to come forward. I got to, this is on to declare the Oregon Court Reporting and Captioning Week, and I became aware of this when I was in charge of the Office of Cable Communications and Franchise Management and then with the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And as we all know, our city website is moving towards captioning on all videos. So I appreciate your work on that, and this is the proclamation. Whereas for millennia, individuals have wanted the spoken word translated into text to record history and to accomplish this task and have relied on our scribes. And the profession of scribe was born with the rise of civilization. And whereas in ancient Egypt, scribes were considered to be the literate elite, recording laws and other important documents, and since that time have served as impartial witness to history. And whereas scribes were present when our nation's founding fathers and mothers drafted the Declaration of Independence and Bill of Rights, and whereas President Lincoln entrusted scribes to record the Emancipation Proclamation, and whereas, since the advent of shorthand machines, scribes have been known as court reporters and have played a permanent and invaluable role in courtrooms across our country. And whereas court reporters and captioners are responsible for the closed captioning seen scrolling across television screens at sporting stadiums and in other community and educational settings, bringing information to millions of deaf and hard of hearing Americans every day. And whereas court reporters and captioners translate the spoken word into text, preserving our history. And whereas, whether called the scribes of yesterday or the court reporters and captioners of today, the individuals who preserve our nation's history are truly the guardians of the record. Now, therefore, Charlie Hales, the mayor of the city of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, does hereby proclaim the week of February 16th to 24th, 2014, to be Oregon Court Reporting and Captioning Week in Portland, and encourages all citizens to observe this week.
Welcome. Good morning.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mayor Hales, Commissioners Fish, Salzman, Fritz, and Novick. Thank you so much for recognizing National Court Reporting and Captioning Week. I'm Carol Studenman, and I'm the president of LNS Court Reporting and Captioning. This is my business partner, Robin. And I'm a past president of the Court Reporters Association and the chair of the Legislative Committee. I serve as a commissioner on the Mount Hood Cable Regulatory Commission and commission liaison to the Portland Community Media Board, and also chair of the National Association Court Reporters Association's Captioning Community of Interest. Monday night, as part of National Court Reporting and Captioning Week, I spoke at the Portland chapter of the Hearing Loss Association of America. I reminded the group that it was as a result of a request by that group for access to council meetings that we have the closed captioning that we have today. Thank you for bringing access to your meetings since the year 2000. This brings access for people who are hard of hearing, deaf, also people learning English as a second language. Thanks to your actions in doing that, the cities of Bend, Eugene, and Beaverton, and the Metro Council also closed caption their meetings. And very soon, Multnomah County will begin adding closed captioning to its meetings for people who are deaf or hard of hearing. Commissioner Fritz, I'd like to give you a special thanks for your support of the community of people with hearing loss. The population is growing all the time thanks to aging of baby boomers, but also for those earbuds we stick in our ears and play the music too loudly. If you can hear the music coming out of somebody's earbuds, it's too loud and it's damaging their ears. So turn it down, folks, and you'll save your hearing. Mayor Hales, commissioners, thank you so much for being a leader in this area and a model for other local governments in our community.
Hello, my name is Robin Nodlin. I'm currently president of the Oregon Court Reporters Association, and I'm honored to be here today. I've been a stenographic court reporter for 34 years, a partner with Carol in our business, LNS Court Reporting and Captioning, for 27 years. The city council meeting today is being captioned, and we can see the captions above us and also on cable access and on the web. We're both members of the National Court Reporters Association, and NCRA is the country's leading organization representing stenographic court reporters and broadcast captioners. NCRA has announced February 16th through the 22nd as National Court Reporting and Captioning Week. The Awareness Week pulls together a nationwide effort to highlight the contributions of stenographic court reporters and captioners to society and showcase the career opportunities that exist in the court reporting and captioning fields. Court reporters have had and do have a large impact on capturing history for posterity. From 1945 to 1946, stenographic court reporters created the record of the Nuremberg trials. Today, with the use of technology, an elite team of stenographic reporters are creating the transcripts of the Gitmo military commissions of the suspects in the USS Cole bombing in Yemen and the 9/11 attacks. The transcripts they create while the hearings are in progress and are continuously uploaded to the internet, creating transparency to the public. I wish to thank all the individuals in the City of Portland who have supported stenographic reporting, not only in providing services to the legal community, but also our endeavors to provide live captioning for television broadcasts, hard of hearing employees at various businesses, and of course the Portland City Council. On behalf of the stenographic community, thank you so much, Mayor and Commissioners, in proclaiming February 16th through the 22nd as 24th as Oregon Court Reporting and Captioning Week.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Actually, Mr. Mayor, I'd just like to take a moment to recognize Carol for something completely different, which is that it was in Carol's house that I first learned from her and her husband about a major problem we have in Portland, which is that there are tens of thousands of houses that aren't bolted to their foundations and therefore would not survive an earthquake. So that's become an obsession of mine since then. And I think this fact is, you know, a demonstration of how small a town we have here and how public-spirited people tend to be public-spirited in all sorts of ways. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And it's also important to note that the captioning provides the basis for the official record for the Portland City Council meetings. So I appreciate that. And also that it helps in other ways. I particularly enjoy the captioning at Autzen Stadium for the Oregon Ducks football games. I have issues with sight, and so I no longer have to ask my son who scored at the other end. I can turn around and look at the caption. So let's get...
Yes, please. Would you like to do a picture with us?
Yep. Carol just told me they do the captioning at the Moda Center also.
Ah.
I know less about basketball than I do about football.
Thank you very much. We appreciate what you do. Okay, let's move to communications items, please. Number 154.
154, request of Galen Beatty to address council regarding Columbia Land Trust, Portland Audubon, Backyard Habitat Certification Program.
Beatty? Oh, Galen, sorry. Ms. Beatty. Good morning. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Councilwoman and Councilmen. Thank you for letting us be here. My name is Galen Beatty, and I am the manager for the Backyard Habitat Program for Columbia Land Trust. We are here today with the hope that as the city moves forward with its green infrastructure program, you will think about how to integrate nonprofit green efforts and how those efforts can leverage public investments. The Backyard Habitat Certification Program is a unique collaboration between two large nonprofit organizations, Audubon Society, a statewide conservation organization, and Columbia Land Trust that works from John Day to Astoria, working to have conserved over 24,000 acres through the Columbia watershed. In urban areas, people connect with nature in their backyards. Our organizations support this connection and through the program use it as a conduit for landowners to understand broader conservation efforts. The program is very local, addressing local issues and efforts. Our mission is to engage and recognize urban landowners, 1 acre or less, in the removal of invasive weeds, create wildlife habitat, and to garden sustainably. The design of the program is based on long-term behavior change of the participant, all while having a ton of fun. The criteria for the certification program were developed by a committee of ecologists, biologists, landscape professionals, and stormwater experts, many of whom work for the City of Portland. There are 3 levels of the certification: silver, gold, and platinum. The more you do, the higher level of certification that's achieved. There are 4 elements that are weaved through each certification level: so removal of invasive weeds, planting with natives, managing stormwater on site, and supporting wildlife habitat. It can be a challenge for a homeowner to garden with these elements in mind. They may lack knowledge and information to do so, and it can be cost prohibitive. But by signing up for the program and through the countless partnerships we have with other organizations, agencies, volunteer groups, and green businesses, we make it easy. Once participants enroll, a backyard habitat technician schedules and conducts an hour to an hour and a half appointment with the homeowner. During that visit, the technician comes to understand what the property owner's goals are for the site. I want to support birds. What is this weed and how do I remove it? I want to install a rain garden. Then, a few days later, the homeowner receives a site report written by their technician that has site-specific recommendations to achieve certification based on what's realistic for the homeowner. Total cost for the program is $25. After that initial visit, their membership gives them access to our native plant sales, where material is steeply discounted. Trained volunteers who follow up with participants, and partnerships with landscape professionals and green businesses like Backyard Bird Shop, who donate gift cards to all certified participants. One final comment before I pass it to Nikki. This program has been around for over 7 years, starting in 2006 as a small pilot program in the West Hills, and today it has become a model for other urban conservation organizations throughout the country that want to duplicate our efforts. Having been with Backyard since it started, I feel incredibly blessed to be a part of it, and I would encourage you to think about signing up your own backyard.
Thank you. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us here today. My name is Nikki West, and I manage the Backyard Habitat Certification Program for Portland Audubon. So as Galen outlined, since its citywide launch, the Backyard Habitat Program's been enormously effective. We're currently working in nearly 2,000 properties across the urban landscape, and this is an area that totals more than 350 acres, which is twice the size of Washington Park. In the past year alone, more than 8,000 native trees and shrubs were planted in these certified yards. Your packet includes several maps that show the breadth of backyard habitat across the landscape. And as you can see, these habitats are scattered across all neighborhoods. New habitats are popping up at a rate of about 400 per year. So the significance of just one dot on a map might be small, but together they're a network that creates habitat connectivity for birds and other wildlife and connects urban residents to nature. I invite you to look more closely at the site density map. This is the one that has various shades of purple. The most dense areas are represented with the deepest shade of purple, and they each carry a backstory of inspiring community involvement, as well as creative collaborations with parks, BES, and PBOT staff. For example, you can clearly see the areas around Markham Nature Park in southwest Portland and Baltimore Woods in St. John's. And these epicenters of backyard habitats complement city investments in these green spaces by more deeply engaging community partners and literally physically extending the ecological services of these parks onto private properties. In partnership with BES, we've conducted focused outreach within the Tabor to the River program area. It's a highly effective campaign that promotes backyard habitats and educates residents on the importance of this public investment. Furthermore, we actively connect all program participants to the city's tree bait program and the city's EcoRoof program. We distribute print materials for those programs and publicize your efforts through our multiple grassroots channels. And more recently, we've begun deepening our relationship with the Green Street Stewards program in effort to engage our program participants in maintaining city bioswales. So at a time when the city faces cuts to several programs that are integral to advancing the green infrastructure agenda, programs like Backyard Habitat Certification effectively leverage outside NGO funding, volunteers, and our grassroots community connections to support your watershed goals. So if we think about these partnerships spatially, we have a really powerful scenario where the city is investing in capital improvements and stormwater management in the streetscape. And then we have Friends of Trees that picks up that effort at the curb and is creating tree canopy in the parking strips and other right-of-way. And then we have Backyard Habitat and DPAVE that pick up the baton at that point and carry that effort into private property in backyards and parking lots. These are areas that are otherwise off-limits to city, save for regulatory situations. So in conclusion, we're proud to share the ways that this program augments city efforts to achieve watershed goals and protects your long-term investments. But this is just the beginning, and we're excited to deepen this mutually beneficial relationship. And most of all, we look forward to seeing your sign up for the program.
Mayor, I just have one question, if I
sure,
could.
Please.
First, thank you for all your work and an inspiring presentation. And thank you for being such a good partner in helping the city manage stormwater and the green infrastructure, which, after all, you know, is good for the environment, but also saves ratepayer dollars. So it's a double win. Looking at your participation rate chart and looking at the prior map, the density map, it shows that in areas where you have the highest concentration, and probably the area of opportunity that this map suggests is east of 205.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So at some point, as the commissioner in charge of the Bureau of Environmental Services, I'd like to get your thoughts as to how this program could become more robust in mm-hmm. that part of our city, where, after all, we have 40% of our families
right.
with kids. And are there barriers that you're encountering, and what can the city do to help partner with you to expand the benefits of this program east?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
We'd love to hear from you on that.
Yeah, at this moment.
No, it's
okay.
Later.
I have a lot of thoughts.
We're working on it. Yeah, we recommend
like
that.
We'll have you in for a briefing, but if you could share some thoughts with us, because we'd like to find a way to make the program also meet some of our equity goals and geographic equity.
That we're done with the rest of the city, but your point's sound, which is that there's a huge amount of opportunity there and not a lot of participants yet. So that's great. I just love this collection of partners that you mentioned. I mean, not just the two that are represented here, but Friends of Trees and DPAVE and the others that really do leverage long-standing public policy in the city to use green infrastructure in an intelligent way with people participating as citizens. I really like that. And in fact, Commissioner Fish was being modest in not mentioning this, but the Bureau of Environmental Services pointed out this morning in a press release that no doubt won't get much attention because it's all good news, that our stormwater system performed amazingly in this last very rainy weekend. We did not have a combined sewer overflow, you know, even though one would have expected that in storms past. And the Johnson Creek Greenway has really performed in the way that it was intended to, and we did not have the usual and customary flooding along Johnson Creek. So the investments that have been made by the city under several members of this council as commissioners in charge of BES are now really paying off for our citizens, and the fact that people are doing these things on a small scale in their own property just augments that.
Mayor, can I pick up on one thing you just said? We all occasionally get snarky emails from people asking why would we have a grants program that spends a few thousand dollars, for example, helping a church convert a asphalt parking lot into a rain garden or a community garden. And the short answer is that when we use DPAVE and our friends here and others to do that, we're actually taking a lot of stormwater out of our system and having nature treat it, which in the long run prevents these kinds of combined lessens the chances that we're going to have a regulatory problem with overflow in our CSO, but also is core to our overall mission, which is using nature to help us manage stormwater. So that's the reason we spend a few thousand dollars with nonprofit partners removing asphalt, because in the long run, it takes pressure off our system and actually saves money. So we thank you for, you know, your partnership.
Thanks very much. Okay. Next one, please.
For the record, I should just announce that we've just heard item 155, request of Nikki West.
Correct.
And 156, request of George T. Espinoza, Sr. to address council regarding grant proposal to help the disabled write a resume.
Mr. Espinoza, you here? Okay, we'll see if he comes in later, and let's move on.
157, request of Peter Andrews to address council regarding sidewalk ordinance and livability issues. And Mr. Andrews contacted us this morning. He can't make it today.
Oh, okay. All right.
158, request of Alan Silver to address council regarding King Neighborhood Association summary on development and its effect on residents. And Mr. Silver also needs to reschedule.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll reschedule those. Let's move on to consent calendar. I don't think we've had any requests to remove anything from the consent calendar. Is that correct? If not, then let's take a roll call on consent, please.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. 9:30 time certain. Number 159, please.
159. Appoint Bridget Donegan, David Green, Mae Wilson, Gene Tuller, and James Young to the Citizen Review Committee Advisory Board to the Independent Police Review, a division of the City Auditor's Office.
Good morning.
Good morning, Council. So we're here to present
you. Name and the record, Constantine.
Oh, thank you. My name is Constantine Sevier, Director of the Independent Police Review Division.
Assistant Director Anika Bent-Albert.
So we're here today for Council to appoint five fabulous new members of the Citizen Review Committee. As you folks know, the Citizen Review Committee is an advisory body to the City Auditor. They serve a variety of functions for our city, but I think their most important function is hearing appeals of community members in cases where they believe that there has been some sort of misconduct done by a police officer. And also they conduct reviews of the Portland Police Bureau, conduct reviews of our office. The five members are David Green, Bridget Donegan, Mae Wilson, Gene Tuller, James Young, and those five folks are the result of 53 folks putting in applications with our office after an extensive outreach recruitment that our staff conducted. And these people are actually just there's not enough I can say about them. There's one of the issues that we've had traditionally with the CRC is having a broad diversity of the community. I think one of the things that community members have brought to us is that IPR and the city needs to do a better job in trying to recruit not just folks who are, you know, kind of in the retired stage of their life, but also younger members, folks who actually reflect the diversity of our community. And I think we're doing a much better job of doing that. And I don't think we're absolutely there. And not to kind of go over the new CRC members' bios in too much depth, but just if you've had an opportunity to look at it, you're just outstanding individuals. So with that, we would ask that you would approve these people to serve on the CRC for a three-year term.
Great. Questions?
I just wanted to say that I'm impressed you're able to get people to serve in the CRC given this 21-day deadline to resolve appeals that's going to be imposed by the new settlement.
But I didn't tell them that yet. Commissioner, you make a really good point. One of the things about the DOJ agreement that we've all had to agree to, because I think it's in the best interest of the city, but there are costs to that agreement, and it's going to cost. We're going to have to be more flexible with our community members. Part of that is the current CRC has a request with the police bureau of having them have remote access to some of the information. So I think we ask a lot of the CRC, and I think it's incumbent on us as a city to be flexible with them. So that's a very good point. Thank you, sir.
And do you want to go ahead and describe item 160 as well while you're here, which is the pool of volunteers?
Yes. So 160 is about the Police Review Board community members. As part of the City Code 320-140 that governs the Police Review Board, where the Police Review Board has a pool of community members who hear cases of officers facing discipline of a day or more. We have 8 new members, and I'll read their names for the record. Arn Seiler, Adam Green, Cyrus Baffi, Juan Muros, Kathleen Abbott, Kate Fontersega, Susan Steinman, and Steve Yarosh. The folks who will serve on the Police Review Board will do that in a rotating basis. In use of force cases, there will be 1 community member, Police Review Board member, and 1 CRC member per the city code changes that council made recently. The folks who will be on the Police Review Board in one item, number 160, they're professionals who have who are really busy people but are committed to our city. Mr. Vaffi is a commercial banker. Ms. Vontasega is an attorney who formerly worked at the district attorney's office and currently is working with the county. All these people are very busy people, but they are willing to make that time commitment. And what folks do on the Police Review Board is very important to our city. In particular, every officer-involved shooting in custody death goes to a Police Review Board. And given the confidentiality that happens with any kind of officer disciplinary system, there's not a lot of information that we can kind of release a lot of times. But the Police Review Board community members are really the eyes and ears of the community on the board. So the fact that we have such a stellar cast of folks willing to serve on the Police Review Board, I think demonstrates their high caliber.
So I note in reading the applications, it looks like there are no people of color being appointed to the CRC. I'm just wondering how many people of color applied.
Well, I try not to define who considers themselves a person of color or not, but there is somebody of mixed race who is going to be a new CRC member.
But just 1 out of 50?
Sorry, of the 53 applicants for
yes.
the CRC?
And then we don't have the demographic information for the Police Review Board members. Can you tell me the demographics of those folks?
Yeah.
I believe that information is on their actual applications if they chose to fill it out.
So this is of concern to me, and I know to you, to make sure that we have folks on the Citizen Review Committee who reflect the demographics of our city. And I'm pleased to see that you've been able to recruit some more women, because that has been very much lacking. Just wondering what you see as the barriers to people of color applying to for this position.
You bring up 2 really good points. One with women, I think one of the issues that we have in getting women in particular to serve on the CRC is, even though our society has changed immensely, where a lot of women are, obviously fully incorporated in our society, but the CRC meetings go from 5:30 to 8:30 once a month. There are a lot of obligations that women in particular in our society face, and the time commitment when we've tried to recruit particularly younger professionals, younger people who are just starting out their careers, that they feel that they don't have the ability to give up that much time to a community board, even if they were interested in doing that. Persons of color, I think one of the issues that we face with persons of color is not just a recruitment of saying, okay, you guys should think about serving on the Police Review Board, but also trying to mentor folks of color to serve on these boards, to know that there is these opportunities available to them. So also a comfort level. Go ahead.
Well, could you describe your outreach efforts to try to recruit professionals of color to be on that?
Well, we have a phenomenal outreach coordinator, Irene Konev, and we are plugged into every chamber of commerce of the different ethnic groups in the city, so the African American Chamber of Commerce, the Asian American Chamber of Commerce, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, as well as local community-oriented neighborhood associations. So when we had the recruitment for the CRC and the PRB, we broadcast that to all those organizations, had meetings with those organizations. I've had meeting with individuals. Yes.
Are there still openings on the Citizen Review Committee?
No. As of right now, there are not.
And when will the next folks be termed out?
2015 is the next step. So it's one of those things where once we're done with this recruitment, we basically have to start ramping up to start the next bunch of recruits.
So did you consider not moving this set of nominations forward to try to do some more outreach to encourage a wider diversity of folks to apply?
You know, as a person of color, I believe diversity is very important, particularly in Portland. At the same time, for us to function as an oversight system, we have to have 11 CRC members. The five people that we have right now bring us to 11 exactly. So there's the importance of continuing the mission of engaging in critical oversight of the Portland Police Bureau, which, you know, in my humble opinion, I believe is the most important bureau of the city. At the same time, meeting our own equity goals that the city has and that the auditor's expectations for our office of us not only being as diverse as the city, but kind of outdoing what the city does, particularly in this area. So this is something that we've tried to increase our efforts over time, and I believe the candidates that we have right now demonstrate our, you know, what we've done heretofore compared to where the CRC was several years ago.
Right, and obviously we have five people on the council who don't represent the demographics of Portland either, and yet who are very committed to our equity goals, as I know you are. I'm just wondering, since this is the first time we're going to have 11 on the CRC and you've been managing with 9, if there was any consideration of holding one or two spots in case somebody became interested.
Yeah, that is, you know, we had an issue with a CRC member resigning, and we had to scramble to try to find an additional CRC member. And unfortunately for us, Mr. Green, he's the one with the child, agreed to step up and fill that role. But I think for us, the choice was we came in front of council, took a lot of council's time saying we need to have 11 members. And council, you know, heard a lot from the community saying, okay, you folks should wait. And frankly, I think council stepped up and said, okay, we need to make these changes. These changes aren't everything that we need to do involving the police. So we have 11 members. We're going to give the CRC 11 members. So I don't think it would be responsible of the auditor's office to say at the point that we have council's approval for 11 members for us to kind of sit back on the functioning of the CRC, because we've just kind of raised the issue of how much work it takes to be on the CRC and for us to have a full complement of members. So we've been meeting sometimes 2 meetings a month, and for us to, you know, be at a quorum for us to have enough people to hear an appeal where community members have kind of basically put their heart and soul into a complaint and they're not satisfied with the outcome. The CRC is basically their last step in that process. And for us to basically say we're going to half step it, that's unacceptable. That's my orders basically from the auditor of we basically have to give our all the time. And the CRC members, when they were 9, and we've been actually functioning at 7 for several months now. So and for these folks who are going to step in the place of the people who have left, I don't think it would have been responsible for us to hold any seats vacant at this point.
I'd also like to add that in an effort to reach out to diverse communities and to be more into the community atmosphere, there would be several Citizen Review Committee sessions that will be taking place in the community center rather than at City Hall or at the Portland building. So that's an effort on our part to reach out to different diverse communities.
And I would also like to make a request for amendment, amendment request for Council Agenda Item 159.
Okay, what's that?
Due to an oversight, the following changes are needed in the resolution language on Agenda Item 159. The amendment will, whereas the committee has five vacancies resulting from the resignation of two members, one term expiration, and two new member positions created by Ordinance 186-416 passed by Council on January 8, 2014. Whereas from 53 applicants, five applicants were recommended by a selection committee consisting of three CRC representatives, one member of the community, and the assistant program manager of the Independent Police Review. Whereas the city auditor nominated the five recommended members to the city council.
I'll move that amendment.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call on the amended language.
Prince.
This was circulated to the council offices, and it basically just corrects the numbers. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay. Any other questions for
just before we break on this, Mayor, I want to follow up with Commissioner Fritz on a point. We as a council spend a fair amount of time thinking about ways of creating more access for the public to our work. So that includes from time to time taking our budget hearings out to the public. We're going to announce soon a rate hearing out in the community. But we're also looking at what are the barriers. So what prevents someone from participating? Not everybody has internet access. Not everyone can come to city council during workday. This question about how the timing of meetings might impact working families and ability of a pool of eligible candidates to participate is, I think, something that goes well beyond this discussion to a conversation about all of our advisory bodies. When do they meet? Where do they meet? And are they accessible for everyone that we want to be considered for application, for membership? And as someone with a working spouse who's very active in the labor movement, I get that there's a lot of tag teaming that goes on, a lot of creative scheduling. But I think this discussion, for me, offers us an opportunity to have a broader conversation about being intentional about making our processes accessible to people. And in the process, it may have the effect of broadening the pool of people that would consider. I think that also just, frankly, includes the timing. I know for a lot of people, if you said the meeting started at 8 in the morning, that wouldn't work because a lot of people have to get their kids to school in the morning. So I think this is a good conversation, but I think it should be exported to all of our advisory bodies, and we should be asking this system-wide.
Point. Good. Other questions, comments? Thank you both. We'll see if there's anyone signed up to testify. Anyone signed
no
up?
No one signed up.
Okay. Unless anyone wants to testify. Mr. Green, thank you for coming. Appreciate your service. Then let's take a roll call on the resolution as amended.
Fritz.
I very much appreciate the willingness of these people to serve. It is a huge task, and it's difficult to recruit people. I'm concerned about the lack of diversity on the committee, and I know that there'll be renewed efforts to encourage people to participate. So this is a good time for me to mention that we are currently advertising for the Compliance Office of Community Liaison for the Department of Justice settlement, which is currently under discussion with the fairness hearings. That information is on the mayor's website, and please let people know that that opening is available. Aye.
Fish.
Last night I had the honor of representing the city at a recognition ceremony at the new Stevens Creek Crossing in Southwest for Lee Moore, who was celebrating his 12th year of service on what's now Home Forward. And Lee is now cycling off the board. And it was striking that five former and current board chairs, a city commissioner who was previously the housing commissioner, and some members of the board of this gentleman's current employer came to thank him for his service. And the common thread was gratitude for Lee committing 12 years of his life to public service by serving in a volunteer capacity on a board where there's a lot of work and not a lot of glory, but that at the end of the day, the common refrain from all the speakers was thousands of people in our community have a place called home and a better set of opportunities because of his service. So I just want to use that as a segue to say that we are asking these citizens to take on a very important task. And it's a lot of hard work and sometimes thankless. But many, many people in our community are counting on you getting it right. And so today, as we vote on these appointments, it's our chance to say thank you for agreeing to serve. And hopefully you'll get the full support that you need from us to do your job. But that service is really important, and what makes Portland special is so many people willing to step up and serve in really tough jobs. So we recognize that, and today it's our chance to say thank you for your service. Aye.
Salzman.
Thank you very much for your willingness to serve. We appreciate it. Aye.
Novick.
I also add my thanks, and I know that it's a difficult job that's becoming more difficult. I hope the Police Bureau is able to work with the Auditor's Office to ensure that we can have remote access to records by CRC members. And I am deeply concerned about the 21-day deadline for resolving appeals that's in the DOJ settlement. I just don't see how that's going to be practical. So I expect the CRC to be contacting us periodically on how that's working. And, I mean, at some point, it seems to me we might need to go back to DOJ and say this is just unrealistic. Aye.
Hales.
You know, we depend on citizens in these kinds of appointed roles in a couple of different ways. One, to bring expertise that the five of us might not have. You know, in a small city council, we need to draw on a lot more people in the community for expertise. So we have an urban design commission with people that know more than I do about urban design. And we have a planning and sustainability commission. We have a disabilities commission with people that understand the particular needs of people in our community with disabilities. And that's an informational role that's really important. But this one's a little different. This is more like checks and balances, in which the five of us hopefully will always keep the public interest in mind. But this is an extra measure of assurance to the citizens of Portland that completely disinterested citizens have a review role here for the most serious exercise of the power that the city has, which is the police power. So we really appreciate your service, and it's really important that both the credibility and the integrity of this process be respected. So that's an important charge that you have as members of this commission or this committee. And it's important for us as a city council to know that you're going to give us completely unbiased, unvarnished review of what our officers do in the field. As the police commissioner, I particularly appreciate that. Thank you. Aye. Okay, and then the acceptance of the report, 160, please. Motion.
Fritz. Aye. Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Again, thanks to the members willing to serve on the Police Review Board. Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, thank you very much. Now let's move to the regular calendar because we're a little ahead of our 10:30 time certain. So then let's move to item 170, please.
170, authorize agreements to implement settlement in Wright et al. Versus City, declare property interest acquired through Station Place Lot 7, assignment of parking agreement as not needed for public use, and authorized disposition through termination of parking agreement.
This is a second reading. I don't believe we have anything to remove. Nothing.
And I believe we're going to move to add an emergency clause.
Second.
Any discussion on the addition of the emergency clause? Roll call on that amendment, please.
Fritz.
And this is for the reasons stated in the initial ordinance that we took off last week, and now we're putting it back on. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Salzman? Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And then on the ordinance as amended.
Fritz?
Well, thank you to everybody for continuing to work on this challenge, which is the wider challenge of how do we as Portlanders take care of each other in these troubled times when there's not enough money for affordable housing and a lot of folks who are suffering. And so thanks to Right to Dream 2 members who are here today who are providing safe shelter in their current site. this is not the entire solution, but this is another step forward. And I appreciate particularly Josh Alpert in the mayor's office, who has been Henry Kissinger-like in his negotiating skills, Dora Perry in my office, and the partnership with Right to Dream 2 members who truly know how to collaborate, who understand about a respectful public process, and who are willing to take this next step into the unknown, because we don't know where this money will allow Right to Dream to move to. We're hopeful that there will soon be a safe legal shelter where people who are experiencing homelessness can stay overnight. So again, thank you all to all of my colleagues for your partnership on this. Aye.
Fish.
I want to thank Commissioner Fritz for framing this in the larger context of our fight to end homelessness, because I think that's been obscured. And I also want to acknowledge that in the first 8 or 9 years of that struggle, thousands and thousands of people have moved off the streets to homes, and we should be proud of the progress we've made, but it has not always been a straight line. And one of the beauties of a flexible and innovative plan to end homelessness is there's room for innovation, and there's room to experiment. I've been struck in this debate by some of the arguments that critics have used in reviewing the proposal before us. And I just want to address a few quickly. The first is that somehow in approving this deal and moving forward, we are rewarding bad behavior. I think as adults, we can separate out our feelings towards Mr. Wright, the landowner, and our feelings to the organization R2D2 that has stated very clearly their desire to have a role in their destiny and their future. I think as adults, we can make that distinction. A second critique that I've seen that struck me was the idea somehow that what we're doing is out of the queue, that someone is jumping the line, that it's irregular for us to approach this challenge in this way. Well, I've been on this council long enough to know that that's just utter nonsense. In fact, we have a rich history of jumping the line. And had we not, for example, we would not have one and a second on the way innovative project in our community that blends older adults with foster children in an intergenerational setting. One at the old John Ball site in North Portland, and the second to be built in Lentz. Both were models that were not in the queue, were not foreseen as part of any plan, but were funded because of circumstance and opportunity. So I reject the idea that we need to be bound exclusively by some queue. Third, I've heard some say that there are too many details to be worked out, and somehow it's premature for us to take this step. Well, I'm reminded one of my very first meetings of this council, we were getting a presentation on a transportation project, and this will be very familiar to the mayor. In the course of it, we were told that there was this vision to do a Portland-Milwaukee light rail. The council was asked to commit extraordinary levels of staff time and resources, but there was just one minor complication. No one knew how to fund it. And I turned to the most senior member of the council at that time, and I said, how on earth can we vote to move this forward if we have no way to fund it? And he said, well, that's the way we do transportation funding. We set the vision, we set the priorities, and then we have a terrific track record of securing the grants and other funding that we need to do it. Well, that struck me as an interesting concept, and it also, I think, is one of the reasons we've been so spectacularly successful in transportation, because we've been willing to take some of those risks. A fourth argument that I've heard, and one that I'm getting awfully impatient with in this body, is that somehow we're taking on too much risk that this could fail. I'm not prepared to wave the white flag on things that are different and innovative, because if we end up becoming timid, and if we are only concerned with the risk of failure, then we'll never dare to try something different. And if we never try to dare to do something different, we could become a status quo council that manages an interesting moment in time in Portland's history, but doesn't actually aspire to do something different or better. And so I reject that argument. As I look at this proposal, it is not perfect. There are many details that are to be worked out, and there's no guarantee it will be successful. Okay, we can accept that. But when I look more closely at it, I see something else as well. I see Dyke Dame and Homer Williams and a group of developers and concerned citizens crafting a very creative solution to our thorny problem. I see the mayor's office, and I also want to salute Josh Alpert for his extraordinary service. PDC and Commissioner Fritz refusing to take no for an answer and constantly pushing to this moment. And I see today a council being asked to do something different that seems to be innovative and that might not be successful. Well, I think that's part of our job description from time to time. I recognize that we have had a lot of people playing out of position, and I recognize that there is plenty of time for a debrief about what went right and what went wrong. But I refuse today to join those who want to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And I refuse today to say no to a deal which has the promise of at least providing a better circumstance to a small group of people who have organized and said, help us. And so today I'm pleased to vote aye.
Salzman Novick.
Well, first of all, although I know Commissioner Fritz meant it as a compliment, as one who considers Henry Kissinger a war criminal, it disturbs me to hear Josh Alpert compared to him. So I'd prefer to compare Mr. Alpert to the great Austrian foreign minister in the 19th century, Clemens von Metternich. So I just wanted to state that for the record. And also, Commissioner Fish, I do want to express some concern about the idea that transportation should always move along the lines of we establish the grand vision first and figure out how to pay for it later, because that has got us into a bit of trouble. But I think that, I mean, this is a great day. I mean, R2D2 is an extraordinary organization that has achieved extraordinary results. And I think that it's perfectly appropriate for the City Council to take somewhat extraordinary action in order to recognize and support their success. And I thank the Pearl District investors, Home Williams and Dyke Dame, for their participation. I thank Ibrahim and all of the R2D2 team. And I thank Commissioner Fritz for her tireless efforts, and the mayor and Josh Alpert and their office for their tireless efforts on this issue. As Commissioner Fish said, there's probably elements of this deal for everyone to complain about. I personally am somewhat concerned about the provision that says that if we sell Lot 7 and we wind up with more money than we need to provide for another facility for R2D2, then R2D2 will have a role in deciding what to do with the leftover money, because to me that seems to suggest that R2D2 is a co-owner of Lot 7 with the city, which is not legally technically correct. So I'd prefer that the city be able to dispose of any leftover money on its own, although my understanding is the odds there will be a lot of leftover money are rather low. But that's a detail. And I've negotiated a fair number of agreements in my time, and I know that it's annoying to have somebody who wasn't part of the negotiations and the blood, sweat, and tears jumping into quibble at the end. So I'll state my quibble for the record, but acknowledge that it's a quibble. And congratulations. Thank you so much for all of your work, everybody, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Hales.
Well, thanks to the community of people that have organized themselves as R2D2 for patient good faith, because it's tested your patience, this long effort, and it continues to get to a better solution than a temporary occupation of somebody else's property. So thank you. Thank you, Dyke Dame, and your partners for, instead of spending money on lawyers, spending money on a real solution. Not every property owner would respond that way, and this city appreciates the way you've responded. Yes, this deal, like any other complex partnership, is not perfect. No doubt this good deed will not go unpunished, as they say. No good deed goes unpunished, and this one won't either. But I think we got to a Portland solution of people working together and adding to the possibilities rather than just fighting over a limited pie. And I think that's the good outcome here so far. More work to do more hours on Josh's part and others, along with Commissioner Fritz and her staff, who've worked so hard to get us this far. Josh, one more word of thanks for you. He was allegedly on vacation in a different time zone last week. You wouldn't have known it from the rate of communication back and forth to other parties to this good work. And Josh, thank you. One of these days you'll get to take a real vacation. Well done, everyone. Thank you. Aye. Okay. I need to leave for a few minutes, right? And we're going to let the rest of the council meeting proceed rather than recess it. Sorry? Recess it. Sorry. Okay. We're going to recess the council meeting.
You want to be there.
Briefly. Because we have an announcement outside. Okay. Sorry.
Oh, hold on just a second.